You're listening to the KGRA Digital Broadcasting Station, Salt Lake City, Utah, Van Buren, Arkansas.
Today's episode of Expanded Perspectives is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes in all industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. Right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/expanded. That's ZipRecruiter.com/expanded. Let's start the show. There, everybody, and thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale, and of course, as always, I couldn't steer the ship without mi amigo, the Philly Kyle Wilson.
How's it going, everybody? I'm excited to be here in studio.
You almost got blown away getting in studio.
Yeah, man,
the northern hit.
It's crazy. It was like 50 degrees, and then they're calling for snow and sleet in like 3 hours, and I was like, there's no way.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, as we pulled up to the studio to do some recording, like a big gust of wind hit, and it was cold, and I'm like, it's just so crazy that me and you are going to sit down in studio and record a show, and by the time we step out of here, it'll probably be 20 degrees colder.
It is wild, because I think it was almost 60 today. I want to say 57 was the high that I saw.
It probably was this morning.
And I was kicking around outside in my shorts, my t-shirt, having a great time, and then like this wind all of a sudden slammed. And we don't, like we've said in the past, we always end up getting a lot of ice, and that's what they're warning for right now. Is ice. But you know what? Even though it gets down cold at night, I wonder where the breaking line is as far as like today. There was a lot of sunlight on it and stuff. I wonder if the ground retains enough of that heat for it not to really stick. Like, are the kids just wishful thinking, or is this going to be a thing? You know what I mean?
Well, I understand exactly what you're saying, and I don't think they know, because I've seen cases where it's warm out and it's called for ice, and I'm like, there's no way it's going to stick because the ground, it's been warm for 5 days.
Yeah.
And then sure enough, it's frozen solid.
Yeah.
And then there'll be other times where it's been cold for a while, and I'm like, it's definitely going to stick, and then it doesn't. So,
yeah, I don't know.
I don't think they know.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely don't know. Of course, that's not a shock. There's a lot of stuff that I definitely don't know. So, I tell you what I do know. I do know Jeremy Stevens throws bombs, folks. I was watching the fights last night, and wowzers, what do you think, huh?
Man, that was an amazing knockout, and the finishing shot was the best I've seen since Dan Henderson hit Bisping.
Oh.
You know what I'm talking about, where he was on his back. And he pretty much leapt into the air and timed it perfect.
Yeah.
And that guy's head bounced off the canvas.
That was awful. Oh.
Luckily, the referee saved him.
Yeah.
Because he looked like he was still trying to go. And I'm like, dude, you're done.
Your body's making the movement like a robot, but you're not really there. Nobody's driving the vehicle at this point.
No one is there. And speaking of robots,
I talk about
the robot uprising all the time.
Yeah.
And specifically with these drones, where he's talking about when's it going to be the day when these drones start attacking or robots start attacking? Well, apparently, the day's already come and gone. It's already happened.
What happened?
Russian bases in Syria have been subjected to a series of mysterious attacks, including one conducted by a swarm of armed miniature drones.
Wait a second. So in Syria, there's a Russian base.
Yes.
And they've sent drones, little like drone racing drones.
Someone has.
Some after them.
That's the problem, is they don't know who's behind it. It says many military chiefs are unable to establish who is behind these raids. The latest and most unusual of the incidents saw 10 unmanned aerial vehicles, or UAVs, packed with explosives, descend upon, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, but Kemenim.
You're not.
Kemenim Air Base, which is Russia's vast military headquarters in northwestern Latakia province. And another 3 were attacked by another nearby Russian naval base at TARDIS. Now, the Russian military...
The TARDIS?
Yeah, that's what the name of this Russian naval base is. T-A-R-T-U-S? TARDIS.
I got you.
Now, the Russian Ministry of Defense said on Monday, its military was able to capture 3 of the small-sized air targets of unknown identity. 7 were shot down, and the remaining 3 exploded after crashing nearby on the night of January 5th, 2018. There were no casualties or damage to the base. And a statement issued by the ministry said it was the first time terrorists had used a massed drone attack from the air launched at a range of more than 50 kilometers using modern GPS guidance equipment. The defense ministry also shared images of the captured weapons or drones, and it showed a winged drone and 9 of the alleged improvised explosive devices, so IEDs.
Mm-hmm.
So basically these drones...
A flying IED.
These drones have IEDs attached to them. Now on Wednesday, this last Wednesday, the Defense Ministry announced the drone's launch site was located in the southwestern region of Idlib, a province controlled by several rebel factions and insurgents in the ongoing civil war. The attack came less than a week after 2 Russian servicemen were killed during a mortar assault at the same base. The Russian Defense Ministry was forced to deny reports that 7 warplanes were also damaged in the attack. Now, Russian media reported 2 smaller drone attacks again at another military outpost in the provinces of Homs and Latakia have occurred over the last 2 weeks. Now, there's a girl named Jennifer Kafrilla, who's a senior intelligence planner at the U.S.-based Institute for the Study of War, and she told the Washington Post that the attacks raised questions over Russia's claims that the Syrian war was essentially finished. She said that the incidents were proof that whoever conducted these attacks can still penetrate regime areas and impose costs on the Russians. The gains the regime has made are not secure and are a high risk of being temporary. Now, unusually, they say that no faction in Syria has claimed responsibility for the drone or the mortar attacks. And on Tuesday, the Russian Defense Ministry appeared to accuse the U.S. of being behind the latest attack, claiming that the American Poseidon intelligence aircraft was patrolling over the base during the attack, which they think is a strange coincidence. It also said in an earlier post that the perpetrators needed technology from countries with high technological capabilities, and the drones' explosive devices had foreign detonating fuses. Now, there's a guy named Eric Pahan, and he's a spokesperson for the U.S. Department of Defense, and he told The Independent that any suggestion that the U.S. was behind this is not accurate, that we're not. And they took a look at some of the drones, the photographs that the Russians took of these drones, and after looking at them, the guy goes, yeah, these drones, you don't have to be some super technological country to have these. They're pretty cheap. You can probably buy them on the internet for less than $400.
Ooh.
So, somebody has purchased a bunch of drones. That's how they think it's terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
And have been attacking these Russian bases in Syria with these drones that they figured out how to attach these IEDs. Now, I don't know the capabilities of these drones. I know lots of people have them. I've had my eye on a Mavic Pro for quite a while. I don't know what the payload is. Like, I'm not so sure how heavy is something they can carry. Like, I mean, could it lift this jug of water that's sitting here? Can it lift a brick? I'm assuming.
Well, I've seen them carry around like full-frame cannons. Yeah.
Yeah, I have too. I mean, obviously,
I guess we could look it up.
Depending on the type of drone that they're using. But I'm wondering what the payload is. Also, I have questions about when it comes to IEDs. I don't know how much like a brick of C4 weighs or whatever they're using.
Yeah.
But the Russians were able to track, not only capture some of the drones, but they know where they came from. Now, I don't know how they know that, but maybe satellites or radio frequencies.
Some kind of
frequency.
But
they know that they came from 50 kilometers away. And it was multiple drones. So they were flying in formation. So, like the videos we've talked about all the time where you see Boston Dynamic or these other companies or these universities, lots of times universities like Carnegie Mellon University, where they take these drones and they're able to go through windows. You've seen them in there, and it looks like a school of fish.
It looks like a swarm.
But it's basically drones. Well, terrorists are already implementing this.
You know what's funny?
And what a better technique. I mean, seriously,
yeah.
If I wanted to blow you up, and I know that you have tons of guys lined up in trenches or whatever, with guns. There's no way I can go over there. There's no way I'm going to be able to sneak in over there. I'm going to get shot. But for $300, I can build a drone.
Fly it right into your window.
Fly it over there at night, say. Most of the guys in the troops, not only would they not see it, you know how hard it would be to hit?
And even if you heard it, you're trying to find it in the total darkness.
Yeah.
But the reason you send more than one is once you breach the outside perimeter, then they just keep filing in. I fly it to the outside of your house and detonate it outside your window, blowing a hole in your house. You're not dead. But the other three behind it fly right into your room, and then they detonate. And they just start taking out bits and pieces.
So my question is, if these idiot terrorists are able to do this,
yeah,
what do you think advanced military programs like the Russians have or the U.S. It's probably already in place.
Probably where they got the idea. Probably where they got the technology.
So how... I mean, as crazy as it sounds, when you watch the Terminators movies and Skynet's, these unmanned vehicles are flying around, shooting from the sky against the rebels. Then you got the T-100s on the ground.
I'm surprised.
A real possibility.
It's not been thought up earlier, because if I'm not mistaken, I believe radio-controlled aircraft were started out like in the 60s when they used to do that. That used to be a big thing. It was a big thing of flying those model planes.
Oh, yeah, because even in I can't think of the operation right now. It's on the tip of my tongue. I can't think of it. But when we were trying the Cuban Missile Crisis, we were going to secretly fly a remote-controlled airliner passenger
plane. Yeah, but I don't mean a full size. I'm talking about the little small ones. I'm talking about the little RC, whatever size they would be, the 10th or 13th or 18th or whatever size it is.
I'm sure they had the capability of that in the 50s.
Well, it makes me wonder is the biggest thing because they have cameras. You know, where back then the difference was being able to fly it and see what it was seeing.
Right, you'd have to have a line of sight.
And
that's
now,
why 50 kilometers away. Yeah.
Now it's like they have the technology to have a camera where you can see it from your controller as you're flying it.
And I don't even know that you need the camera anymore. The drone strikes and are sophisticated. Yeah. They go off the metadata in people's cell phones.
But with those things, you may have to free fly them to bring them in. But even then, okay, let's just talk about it, throwing it around. What about a vehicle? You're traveling in your car. And that thing swoops down on top of you at a red light, sets right on top of your car, and detonates. Mm. It's over.
There was a movie in the 80s, and I don't remember the movie, where they had these programmable bullets, and you could shoot them,
What was that?
And it was a little far-fetched at the time, but, nowadays,
now they do. They have it where you can shoot through a window. It blows up right as it goes inside the window.
And they have bullets where you can change the trajectory during its flight. So now if you're a sniper and you're firing at something a mile and a half away, you can make instant...
Laze it and fire.
Corrections during mid-flight. I mean, all this stuff's real.
It's crazy. It's caught up.
The thing is when you're a kid, you always think, well, they need to develop lasers. We're always going to be behind until we need lasers. And now that we're here, I don't know that you do.
Well, the idea of lasers, here's what's funny. Is it's just like anything else, the basics. When you learn the basics of golf, the basics of football, the basics of boxing, the basics of anything, and you get real good at the basics, you'd be surprised at how well people are when they are just... The basics get you a long ways. Well, what's wrong with something that explodes? You don't need anything fancy. If you just... All you need is a delivery system, because we are very, very fragile. So once you get something to explode beside us,
I think lasers are inferior because, like I've always said, whether you have a laser gun or a lightsaber, the Jedi are really effective. But if they fought the Cylons, it would be useless because their outfits are mirrors. So when the laser hits, it would just deflect right off. You can't cut my arm off with a lightsaber if my arm's made of mirrors.
All mirrors, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Doesn't do a thing.
Wouldn't do anything.
We got to get out of this. I'm going to start going crazy. Okay, look, I got something fun for you folks from cryptozoology news.
Oh, you don't say.
A man comes across a Thunderbird up in Pennsylvania, which is funny because I just dealt with a paving company out of Pennsylvania. They came and one of those just randomly knocked on my door. They were doing work down the road. They're like, hey, man, we'll make you a deal. Do your driveway. I'm like, all right, bring it. So
wait a minute. They had the glass shop down the street from your house had to get a paving crew all the way from Philadelphia.
Well, they're actually just south of Scranton is where these people are out of. But I ask them, I go, what the heck are you doing here? Because, you know, the first thing I noticed before I get into this Thunderbird story, folks, the first thing I noticed was his heavy Boston accent. So I'm like, well, I can tell you're from Boston. And he laughed. He goes, you're right. And I go, but I want to know what y'all are doing down here. Because I looked at the truck and the license plate's from Pennsylvania. And he said they come down here, and this time, because the weather's so bad up there,
yeah, makes
they
sense.
Come down here and they spend a few months, a couple months down here in the South, and mainly Texas, and they pave all through here, doing all their work. As the weather gets nicer, they go back home and keep working. So pretty much they can work year-round. They just have to travel to come down here
that
and do
it. That makes sense. Yeah, I never thought
good
of that.
Good guys.
Yeah.
Super nice guys, man. Super nice guys. Knocked it out. So this dude was named Shane R., it says here. And I don't, what is this, Wilkes Barre? Barre? I don't even know what this is in Pennsylvania. Wilkes, B-A-R-R-E. How would you pronounce that, Kyle?
Barre.
Barre?
Mm-hmm.
Barre. This is what he says.
Like Max Barre, right?
There you go. Sure. This is, there you go. Yeah, there you go. Now listen to this, folks. This is what he wrote. It says, it was a warm, sunny day, and I decided to go on a quad ride by myself, as I usually do, when time allows, of course. And as a business owner, this is my way to relax. Now, it seems like my only hobby for a man of 50 years young. Now, this took place in the summer of 2016. He says, now, when I'm traveling on my quad, I go very slowly. No hurry to get to my destination or to spook any wildlife. So after about an hour on this journey, I'm traveling on an old railroad bed, once heavily used for coal mining, that has been removed for some time. Now, this is not a typical path, but a wide dirt road. It says two Jeeps could pass each other with no problems. And to set the location, it's on the outskirts of the city up in the mountains, a very beautiful place here in Pennsylvania. Well, anyway, as I came around the bend, I must have startled this huge bird taking a drink from a large puddle on the path. Now, these puddles in this area remain year-round, and I never saw the bird struggle to take off, but when I saw it, it was already flying away from me. Its wings were out and already soaring. Now, even though I traveled in stealth mode, my quad was still loud enough to hear. Just enough time for the bird to take off. So as soon as my brain realized what I was seeing, I hammered on the throttle to keep up. It was no more than 50 feet in front of me and 4 feet off the ground as I'm sitting. And it was a very warm and sunny day with the sun over my right shoulder. Now, I could see this bird was jet black with feathers like a crow or a raven. It was so black that the sun brought out a bluish purple tint on its wings. I believe I have a tape measure eye, at least compared to most people. Now, this bird had a 10 to 12 foot wingspan and a pretty thick body. Now, my vantage point bearing down on it from behind was unreal. This was no turkey vulture. I've seen many, even up close. Now, I'm no bird expert at all, but I'm always fascinated by hawks. I just love to watch them when I'm out. This was something I felt did not belong, and most importantly, did not want to be seen, unlike other birds. Now, obviously, I didn't see the head. But, as it was incredibly, of course, large. To put it in perspective, in a dream state, you would think you could ride this beast. And this is only from seeing it fleeing just in front of me. Now, when I think about the wings, I would say that I only weigh 165 pounds, and if I needed wings to fly, they would have been large enough. Now, as I tried to gain pace with this bird, I knew I would not be able to, because from where the bird was drinking, the puddles ahead would slow me down for sure. So I shortly stopped to watch this bird traverse the now winding trail. It had still remained about 4 feet off the ground and seemed as if it never moved its wings or even tried to gain altitude. There was no desperate flapping of the wings like a vulture or any other bird that I can think of. It was literally gliding through the forest on that seemingly small path at this point, almost like a plane. Now, after it was out of sight, I knew the path up ahead would split, one going down the mountain, one going up. It is certain to me that the bird glided down the mountain path to gain the altitude it needed. I tried to get another vantage point to see it again, but I failed. Now, to me, I can never unsee this bird, or even I can't understand the size of it being able to utilize these woods for any kind of shelter. There's no way it could fly in this forest unless it walks on the ground a lot. And why wouldn't something that large be seen flying around? Now, this incident occurred almost a year and a half ago, but it still haunts me. See, I can't seem to shake it. Since then, my quad rides have been in one direction only, towards my sighting. I come out to find birds are extremely territorial, and if that's true, I hope to get proof of this one day.
Wow.
So that right there, my friend, was from Shane up there in Pennsylvania. Now,
his quad has stealth mode, which is impressive.
Well, he said he was in stealth mode, but the quad was still loud.
I got you.
So that's it. He's just cruising along, which I understand that. You know, you're just rolling right along. You're having a good time. No big deal. No harm, no foul. And you spook up this big bird. But, I mean, he's not saying that it was monstrous. You know, he's not come forward going, oh, man, this thing's 25, 30-foot wingspan. It's a 10 or 12-foot wingspan. But he goes, it just doesn't match anything that I've ever seen out here. And he brings up a good point that, you know, most of us wouldn't even think of, is in those forests like that, how would it get around?
That's a good point.
You know what? It is, it right? Is. You think of, you're like, man, that's a really good point, is how would it survive up there as far as with the ease of hunting? Because if you watch any of these, you know, nature shows, most of these large birds hunt in open areas where they can fly, they can see, and they can dive. So
you're right. Yeah.
He's not hunting.
I never really thought about that, but that's an interesting.
And he won't fit.
You won't fit.
I don't know what that is, folks, but I hope you enjoyed it. Now, another thing I hope you enjoy is when we get back from the break, I've got some stories here. Now, we've touched on this in the past with our amigo, Mr. Nick Redfern, and I'm going to retouch on some other strange stories and other things to think about anyway with this Bigfoot UFO connection and how it kind of ruffles the feathers of other investigators. So we get back, we're going to check that out. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. Let's get into some fun. Let's get into some cool discussions. Philly, you're going to enjoy this. Now, of course, I was born in 75, and Philly's born in 76.
That's correct.
So this actually happened before Kyle was born, and I was just a pup when this came out. But I have seen it. I have gone back and watched it online and all that stuff since everyone had talked about it. What I'm talking about is the secret of Bigfoot. For those of you that don't know what this is, it's a two-part show of the $6 million man. It is epic.
The graphics are amazing.
Oh, it's so great. Now, it came out in February of 1976. And I didn't know this, but it is, they claim it is one of the most popular episodes ever.
Really?
Of that show. Yes.
So even though it was really cheesy, everybody loved it.
Everybody loved it and still love it. Still love that episode. And I think what's funny about this, and when I explain this to you, you'll understand. But what's funny about this episode is what it touches on back in 76. Now, you know, they always say these movies or these shows are telling you things. You know, a lot of these conspiracy theorists tell you that they're telling things that they already know. That's how they ease you into this. So when you think of it, you got to imagine this. This episode took place in the mountains of California. Okay?
Uh-huh.
Now, the majority of it is this. There was a pair of geologists in this episode, and they're out there looking at earthquake activity. They vanish. So you have to imagine that Steve Austin is the fellow, which is Lee Majors, was Steve Austin. Steve Austin's boss at the time from the OSI, which is who Steve Austin worked for. He was, his boss was named Oscar. Now, his boss was working with these two geologists. So as it goes out, they start trying to find, all right? They start trying to figure this all out. So they send the $6 million man out to try to find where they went. These people vanished. But while he's out there, he finds Bigfoot tracks. Right, Steve Austin.
That's what
finds
I'm talking
these
about.
Bigfoot tracks.
Yeah.
Well, just so you know, if you don't already know, at the time in this show, Bigfoot was played by Andre the Giant. So that's awesome enough. Okay,
makes sense.
So what ends up happening is Steve Austin is there, the $6 million man, and his boss Oscar. They're all in this little camping area, and they get into an attack by Bigfoot. He attacks them. Now during this attack, the $6 million man tears the arm off of Bigfoot, rips it clean off of him.
Really? I don't remember that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, what it does is because everybody freaks out because it's not a flesh and blood animal in that episode. He's a robot. Bigfoot's a robot. What you find out in the show is that Bigfoot is actually a remote controlled robot that's controlled from an alien base inside a set of mountains. And it's controlled by these aliens. They do the whole thing.
There's a theme here on today's show with the robots and drones and stuff, right?
Yeah, and aliens and Bigfoot. It's the best of everything, baby. So, they basically alien abduct the $6 million man. He finds out that that's where the two geologists were. They were abducted also. They were taken there because they had accidentally uncovered this evidence that led to this alien base. And then his business, or the people he works for, OSI, that did all this stuff, they find out that the entire West Coast is about to be hit by this earthquake and could probably wipe out, you know, millions and millions of people. That's the way the story goes. So they go into what happens. So what do they do? Okay, well, we're going to set off this underground bomb, this bomb that's going, I guess, to do something to stop the shift of the tectonic plates. They're going to make it stop the earthquake. That's
like,
the idea. Blow
like,
something up.
Operation Gas Buggy.
There you go. They're going to stop this. Well, what ends up happening, they set it off, but it ends up messing up the secret base of all these aliens, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, oh, no, what do we do, this whole thing? So now they're all freaked out. So they're like, what are we going to do? So the two geologists, they get back together. Steve Austin helps them, you know, and all this. Well, Steve Austin gets help from Bigfoot. And then Bigfoot gives them some help, and they help the aliens, and they all repair all the stuff in their system and their base. Comes around this whole thing. What do? Steve Austin leaves, making sure that nobody knows that Bigfoot's a robot. Nobody knows that the base is there. Nobody knows all this stuff. He helps them build it all back. They erase his memory. Completely erase his memory. Nobody knows all of it. That's the way it ends.
Is this episode on, like, YouTube? Like, can you go back and watch it?
Yeah, I believe you can go back and find it.
I'm going to have to go back and watch this, man.
But so what I've just told you sounds crazy. It sounds insane, right? But, like we've had Nick talk about, and we've all discussed, is there's something going on with Bigfoot that where I don't know. Like we've said, one minute you lean on, is he a terrestrial being? Is he a real ape? Or is it, you know, is it something this crazy? So I'm going to jump all the way up into this July of 2016. There was a fella called into George Norrie's show on Coast to Coast. And this fella called himself Gene. And this man said he was living in Albuquerque there in New Mexico. And that he had a story about hunting elk. All right. That he was hunting elk on the Arizona Mexico border there, and Gallup is actually where he was at.
Yep. Okay, I'm familiar with that.
And that he says that he was on a Navajo reservation there, and he's talking about how rough it is and where he's all at and this whole thing. And this is going to be a transcript from the show, that this is what he said. And I want you to listen to this because it's pretty wild, and it goes along the idea of maybe they are interdimensional. Let's just say that. It says, this is what he goes on to say, that I am an ex-Navy corpsman. Now, I know when something's following me. I'm about an hour and a half back in the mountains, and I'm way out in the middle of nowhere. So I go around, and I end up in a box canyon on top of this mesa that overlooks the boonies, and it's like a 1,000-foot drop-off. He says, now real quick, I head back towards the box canyon. I was trying to get away from whatever was following me, and all of a sudden I hear these thundering footsteps, and I lean up against the wall, and here comes about 7 horses from out of the middle of nowhere into this box canyon. Now, wild horses, mind you. Well, I get around the box canyon, and there it is. It jumps off the top of a 20-foot dead-end box canyon. I was at the bottom. I'm looking up, and now I'm looking at it, and it jumped. 1 foot down, 1 foot up on the side. It was exactly what everybody says that you guys talk about. Now, he's talking about the whole Bigfoot thing. I'm in the middle of a Native reservation on the top of a little mesa. And it blew my mind. It's looking right at me. It's less than 50 yards from me. And I took off running. I didn't freeze. I took off running.
Yeah.
So this Bigfoot has jumped 20 feet off into this bottom.
So you're like, I'm trying to put it to scale in my mind. You know, like when you're driving down an interstate, like a typical overpass is around 16 feet.
Yeah.
So basically like that.
Basically.
And then it just hikes its leg up like Captain Morgan.
Just lands down there and just standing there. Now, this is great. He says, then, after he took off running, then something threw a rock at me, and it was a huge rock. He said, I would say it probably weighed about 8 pounds. He said, it would have killed me.
Yeah.
Says, I looked, and he goes, then I tripped out. He said, at 120 to 200 yards, there it was, and it's looking at me. He said, it blew my mind because it threw an 8-pound rock at least 120 yards.
Jeez. Yeah.
Now, he says this thing was huge when he saw it.
Huge.
Yeah, it's so huge, it's huge. Now, he goes on to keep talking about all this, right? That he was like, he said, he said he decided to take a shot with his rifle. And then he goes on to say that he believes he hit directly in the chest. He hits it. He says, and after taking a few steps, this thing simply disappeared into thin air, like it wasn't there. Now, he goes over there to investigate, okay?
Yep.
And he finds these footprints in the ground. But there's no blood or any physical evidence at all. Right?
Okay.
He says this, I don't know where it's from, but wherever it came from, when I hit it, it had the ability to disappear into thin air. He says, you know, now I looked. I followed the footprints. I walked the 120 yards. It wasn't that far from the top of a mesa. It had nowhere to go. Never, ever have I seen it again, and never, ever have I gone back, not by myself.
So he's out hunting for elk.
He's elk hunting.
He's got the thing in his scope. He fires around. He
at
knows,
120 yards after it threw an 8-pound rock at him.
He knows he hits it, and when he shoots it, it just dematerializes right in front of him?
Vanishes.
Wow.
He goes around, and I'm assuming the way it's blended in, but he's like, I followed the tracks back to where it jumped off, everything.
The track stopped everything.
Right where it hit the ground, the whole thing. He said, but where I shot at, it just vanished after I shot at it. It's what he claims. Now, there was also a piece that Nick Redfern had shared. And he talked about a woman named Jenny Burrows. And I'm going to share this because it's rather strange, too. This actually took place in Seattle, up in the forest up there in Seattle, because she had claimed that she saw a full-grown saber-toothed tiger.
Okay. Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And the reason I share that, you're going to catch on to this. Now, according to her, that she had had her dog. He was taking her dog named Bobby. It was a Labrador. And they were just walking in the woods, took him out for a walk. And that, she said, suddenly Bobby just stops and starts whining. You know, like a dog, just that whimpering whine. But said, it's not like a normal, like a whine, like I want to go chase something. You won't let me off the leash to chase it. Said, Bobby lays down to the ground whining and shaking.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah, now you're like, uh-oh. Now, Jenny instantly, she's like, my dog's having a seizure. This is it. Something's not good. So she squats down. She's patting on him like, oh, you know, freaking out. Like, what's happening to my dog? Says the dog is looking off to the left where they're standing, intently, like whining and looking in the woods. So she looks to the left. She said when she looked to the left, she was in horror at what she saw. She said there was a large cat in the undergrowth, in the ferns, whatever's growing up in there.
Right.
It's crouched down in there. Now, she goes, it was like a mountain lion, but way bigger. Way bigger. Now, could it have been? She said, yeah, it could have been. But she said that the dread that I felt was so big, so big. And then she said that I could see its face clearly. And she goes, what I could see was its two huge saber fangs sticking down out of its mouth.
So if it was a mountain lion, it had two ginormous incisors.
Yes, hanging
down.
It was twice or three times bigger than a mountain lion that was underneath all that stuff. And she even said this, and Nick had even quoted saying that you don't have to work in a zoo or a museum to know what a saber-toothed tiger looks like. It's what she said. Everyone knows.
Yeah.
Everybody knows.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah. But this gets even wilder. Now, she said that this thing was standing there in full view, and it comes out of the bushes and just stands there. But she said that she could see that its body was semi-transparent. She goes, the bottom of its front paws were missing. She said that she could see what she was seeing was not still living saber-toothed tiger.
She saw the ghost of a saber-toothed tiger?
The left of, that's what she said. She goes, it was almost like a ghost. Like it was in its old hunting grounds from thousands of years ago that's where it was at.
Wow, man, that is, I've heard cases of dinosaurs. I've never heard of cases of saber-toothed cats. That is interesting, and it also, it makes more sense than a physical specimen still living, you know what I mean? But that is interesting.
It's ghostly, wild, right?
Yeah.
That you see part of it and you could see through it. What? But what's wild is the dog saw it. So it's not like it was hurt.
Right, yep.
The dog is reacting to what that is. So it's real enough that it's got the dog flustered.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just her having this whole thing. Now, back in 2010, there was a fellow named Rick Phillips, and he had posted some stuff online on his blog, and he was talking about Jonathan Downs there at the Center for Portean Zoology.
Yep.
And Jonathan was the man that coined the term zooform. Back in the 90s, And it was about what he said was a phenomenon that was a result from a complex psychosocial and sociological phenomenon that this is what he said. It suggests that to classify all such phenomena as paranormal in origin is counterproductive. It says thought form might be understood as psychospiritual or complex of energy or consciousness manifested either consciously or unconsciously by an individual or a group. Thought form are understood differently and take on different forms. Now, Rick goes on and makes this whole thing. He talks about anomalies and paranormal entities that might fall in these certain temporary beings. Now, what he's talking about is temporal characters that represent this idea. And this is what he leads it into. Bigfoot type entities, like the ones and things seen on the Skinwalker Ranch.
Right.
Is what he talks about. He talks about Mothman. He talks about chupacabras. He's like, are these thought forms?
I've often thought about that when it comes to Dogman.
Yes. Same thing.
Because I'm like, you know, why all of a sudden, like in the 80s, did all of a sudden people start seeing upright walking canines or werewolves or whatever? And is it like we talked about, like so many people are familiar with what a werewolf looks like because of cinema, because of film. So people are now seeing this. Maybe 300 years ago, people were seeing strange things in the woods, but they were taking on a different form, like a centaur or something, because they were familiar with Greek mythology. They didn't have movies, but it was based on the stories that they knew about, a minotaur, a centaur or something. And so there's constantly these beings or whatever in the forest that, for whatever reason, are taking the form of what people collectively
like
are thinking
fear.
About. Yeah.
Like the evil entity that feeds on your fear, like Slender Man.
It makes more sense.
It does. When you start thinking about
it
this
way.
Well, and I'm bringing this up. You're going to enjoy this. It says that on one warm summer's night, there were three teenage girls had gone to visit another friend. Now, this friend's parents were out of town, so the girls planned to watch TV, play some music, and have a little fun and, you know, good time. Now, during the night, their discussion turned to horror movies and the paranormal. So the four girls decided to try out an old Ouija board. It says none of them were frightened by the board or the possible implications. In fact, they had no real idea at all how to even use this apart from what they had seen on TV or had read. So what initially started out as nothing more than a bit, of course, fun for these young girls, something darker and more terrifying ended up happening, of course. Now, using familiar television imagery, it says here, they removed a wine glass from a kitchen cupboard, placed the index fingers of their right hands atop it, and we're soon working on the board, okay?
Mm-hmm, I'm with you.
Now, of course, what would they be talking about? Who are they going to marry? When are they going to marry? You know,
let's try
to find out from dead relatives. Let's see what all is going on. They try that. Nothing, right? Nothing.
Let's put a hex on Stacy, guys.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, right.
So all this goes on. They said nothing really happened. Nothing was going on. So they said, but something did occur. On two occasions, the electricity went off. So that kind of scared the girls. So, you know, that was it. So one of the girls explained later that when that happened with the electricity, they said we all kind of looked at each other in a funny way, decided to stop. It was all too, you know, it was real late. Damage was done. Said, and the doorway was unwittingly opened, is what she said. So nothing further happened that evening. Now, the girl that hosted it, her name was Laura. Now, she can't explain much of what happened on the next day, but as it progressed into the afternoon, of course, and later that evening, she said once again the electricity went off about 6 p.m. in the house, okay?
Okay.
And she said at that point, there was real dark feelings began to take a real strong hold on her.
Mm.
So she knew something wasn't right. So she decided, you know, to go ahead and go to her bedroom. She's like, I'm getting scared. I don't feel right. I'm going to bed. She goes to sleep. Later on that night, she wakes up from a deep sleep in the wee hours of the morning because she said she heard something that sounded like loud yet disturbing animal screams emanating from the vicinity of these small, thick woodland patch right by the back of their house.
Yet,
what? Woke her up. Now, she said that, of course, curiosity gets up, but she's a little freaked out. So she gets out of bed, she goes to the window, and she's looking out, right?
Yep.
Nothing out of the ordinary, she said she could see. She's looking out there where those screams are coming from. Nothing. She goes back to her bed. Boom. She goes to sleep. Not for long. So it's about 2 a.m. She gets woken up again. And this time, she said that she smells the grossest smelling thing ever. She said it smells like old rotting cabbage.
Hmm.
So she put out her hand to turn on her lamp that's set on the table beside her bed. And she said at that point, she is panic stricken because there is a large black silhouette of a hairy figure that's just partially eclipsed by these shadows in her room. Now, she said this thing was hunched over and had huge long arms and big white eyes. Now, she goes on to say that the very moment she tried to scream out loud, she experienced this sudden paralysis. Now, she says, I was sitting up, but I couldn't speak. I couldn't move at all. Now, she says the worst was still to come, that this big hairy creature comes right over to her on her bed and stoops down, and she says it brings its face within 8 or 9 inches of mine.
It was in her house?
Inside her bedroom at this point. And she says it looked just like Bigfoot, a big hairy thing that I couldn't tell if it was a monkey or a hairy man. And she says for several moments, this big thing just stands there and stares me in the eyes, just glaring at me. And she says it slowly and carefully, like it's mindful of where it's at, backs away. She said, and it backed away until it became like this dark mass up in the shadows of in her room.
Right.
She goes, then this form just disappears. It's just like it had been sucked into the shadows.
So Sasquatch is interdimensional.
Well, that's kind of what she leads into. Is she's like, this thing certainly had scared her, but she said she didn't get the feeling that it was in any way hostile towards her. It was just a big, hulking, imposing thing. Now, she goes on to say, you know, that she believed that they had opened up a doorway with that Ouija board, closed it. Now, she goes on to talk about that it never returned. So it vanished right in front of her. Now, this isn't the only time that people have had these crazy vanishing Bigfoot like we're talking about.
I've never heard of them inside of someone's bedroom.
No, me either. But in a trailer home in Cincinnati, Ohio, back in 1973, there was a woman named Miss Hetfield. Miss Hetfield had a 13-year-old son. Now, this took place in the wee hours, I'd say 2:30.
Did he grow up to be James Hetfield?
That'd be awesome, wouldn't it? And, yeah, right. On October 21st, at 2:30 in the morning, Miss Hetfield got up to get her a drink, and she said she noticed some really odd lights in the parking lot adjoining out there to where she lived. So she was looking out the window like anybody would do. You're like, what is all this light, you know? I mean, it's like you wake up in the middle of that, and there's an ambulance or something down the road. You're going to look around. You're like, what the heck? So she looks out the window. And she says there was one light in particular that caught her eye. She said it was a weird, unexplainable cone of light. She said the light was shaped like a huge bubble umbrella, and it was about 7 foot in diameter. Now, she goes on to say that nearby she spotted a grayish ape-like creature. And she said this creature had no neck, a very sizable waist, moving slow, and had a very downward-angled snout. Now, she said it entered into this light. And then about 5 minutes later, so she's watching this whole thing. Now, the time might be off a little bit, but she said about 5 minutes later, this UFO that she's looking at, this light vanishes, and so does the Bigfoot, or this ape thing vanishes also right in front of her. Now, that's not the only thing. Again, a few days later in Pennsylvania, Fayette County, we're back in Pennsylvania, folks, in 1973, there's a group of farmers said they saw a dome-shaped UFO that was very brightly lit, and they claimed that it was about 100 feet in diameter, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So they drive towards it, and everybody's like, what is this? So they drive out there to it.
Yep.
They claim, this group of farmers claim, when they get there, they see not one but two giant creatures covered in matted hair, real thick, like thick, stray-dog matted hair, luminescent green eyes, and they said their arms were longer than their knees, so it's hanging down past their knees. Now, one of the farmer's sons starts shooting a gun off at it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And it says one of these creatures raises its right arm up in the air. And they said at that very moment, the UFO disappeared. And then the two of these Bigfoot ran off into the woods. They said they never saw them. They never saw them again. So this UFO's there. The Bigfoot are there.
Yeah.
Like the Bigfoot are talking to the UFO.
Yeah.
Farmers go to popping shots.
Well,
gone.
Okay, we always, you know, like to think about what extraterrestrials would actually look like from another galaxy and stuff. And, you know, some people say they're going to look like insects. And other people talked about they're going to be more plant-like or something. So my question is, why couldn't extraterrestrials look like Sasquatch? I mean, maybe like, you know, Chewbacca, there is a planet that's inhabited by Wookiees. It's a planet inhabited by Sasquatch. And it looks like that. And that's why people see them. That's why nobody can catch them.
You know, well, at this point,
I mean,
is it any
crazier than some of the other things you hear about on this show?
No, there's, I mean, anybody's theory at this point is up and open for debate because we don't know. We have zero hard evidence of either.
Yeah, even if a hunter, say, shoots one and kills it, the invisible spacecraft that's cloaked at the time just like beams up its body into the spaceship. That's why you never find the skeleton.
What if when it dies, it vanishes?
It may be.
That's it. Well, so I've got another one here for you. You ever heard of the Bossack encounter? This is the one that gets everybody going.
I believe I am familiar with this one. Does this have to do with the orbs and things seen?
You're going
to
love this. On December 2nd of 1974, 10:30 p.m., there was a dairy farmer, and his name's William Bossack. He was 68 years old at the time. Now, he had had a farm there, a dairy farm, for a little over 40 years, okay?
Okay.
And he lived in Frederick there, and that's in Polk County there in Wisconsin, the northwestern part, actually. And he had been at a farmer's co-op there in Frederick and was driving back in his car back to his house there in southeast Frederick. He says he was about a mile from his farm when he spotted this object on the side of the road, the left side of the road up in front of him. So he slows down, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he says there's a big fog bank that he hits. Poop, he hits this. So his headlights, he says, reflecting off this. He slows down. He's like, what the hell's going on? Now, this object, he says, was completely motionless. And he says it seemed to him to be between 8 and 10 feet in height, but it wasn't luminous. He's like, so it wasn't glowing, but it was reflecting his headlights.
Right.
And he said that it had a transparent, like, sector around it resembling glass. So it's like in the shape of a shell or a bell, Kyle. A bell.
Reminds me of the War of the Worlds, the original movie. Remember, where it looked like they were underneath like a glass, like what you'd put a cake in.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he even says it was kind of conical. It had like a peak on top. Like the top of this machine. He said, and at the top, it was lit. And Bossack said that he could see an occupant, somebody in there. Said the body was visible and said he had his arms raised above his head. Now, Bossack said that he's talking about this creature, this thing that he saw. He said this creature who had a head and two arms showed the characteristics, he says, that were not very human. Now, what he means by that was stiff hair or hairs coming out of the sides of its head, whose face itself was hairless. And a beardless chin, says its eyes were large and protruding, and its ears were described as pointing on 8 centimeters and resembling those of a young calf. You ever heard an alien described as a young calf?
Never.
Yes. Now, he said it seemed to be dressed out of something very tight-fitting, covered with brown fur, or, says, to be covered with brown hairs on a higher part of the body, including the arms and all this. He said there was no collar or features that were visible on this suit. He says the bottom of the character was lost from sight in this fog, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, he was terrified at this. He's like, oh, what in the hell? He said, now, he saw the face of this creature, and he said the creature's face showed signs of fear. So they were both like, ah, you know, they surprised each other. So he had slowed down and almost stopped by the time he got up there. But he's like, at this point, I'm so freaked out, I just, you know, drop the hammer. Just gives her the onion and takes off, right? Says when he did that, the inside of his car became darker as if the headlights had weakened, and he heard a noise of friction like that of branches of trees, like you're driving through brush and it's just dragging down the car. So he gets back home and he tries to look at this where the encounter had occurred from the vantage point of his house, you know. So he's up there up on the hill, he's looking at it, it's like, you know, what the heck's going on down there? He can't really see it because of the fog. So he's trying to see where the lights are setting and all this. So the next morning he goes back to where all this happened. And he's looking for any traces of the landing or any evidence of the presence of this object. You know what he finds?
No.
Nothing. Nothing. Except for one thing. He said there was a little flattened circular area in a field. That was one version of the story that people had heard. He didn't tell anybody what he saw for almost a month. He didn't tell his wife, his son, nothing. Nothing. But finally, he decided to talk about it, and he contacted a newspaper. So the newspaper sends out these investigators, okay? And they met with him. And they both said, hey, look, this dude is a stand-up guy, like you and I've talked about. He's got no reason to make this stuff up. He's a stand-up guy. And he's got a great reputation in the community. The community of this whole area, they love him for who he is. So, he said, well, in order, you know, I know y'all are going to be skeptic of the story that I'm telling y'all. So, how about this? How about y'all lie detect me? If you want to find out, you know, you're welcome to do one on me. So, he's like, hook me up. We'll see what happens. So the story goes on. And then, it gets built up and gets built up. People start saying that it was Bigfoot flying this UFO. That what he saw wasn't an alien. It was Bigfoot in this. So later on, Bossack gets investigated by Everett Leitner. All right. Now, he's a field investigator there. So he sits down. He says that the newspaper account, which appeared there in the St. Paul Pioneer Press, was, he says... extremely accurate. This is what Bossack says. He goes, it was accurate. He goes, except that the ears on the human that he claims he saw inside were placed higher on the head. And the human, as what Bossack referred to it, said it had hair sticking out of the sides of its ears, with ears protruding about 3 inches, and that they were shaped like a calf's ear. So it's coming out of the top, not like the sides, out of the, almost like a fox is what we're talking about now. He also says it had no collar or shirt with a seam in front, but appeared to be clothed in something tannish brown in color and skin tight like a diver's suit. Now he goes on, he's given more detail. He's like, both arms were extended above its head and hair stuck out from the outside of the arms. He had no beard, but there was hair or fur on the upper part of his body. Now, like he says, he goes, the rest of it, man, I couldn't see. From the waist down, because of this fog, I couldn't see it. I don't know, but I can tell you that its eyeballs were very large and protruding, like bugging out. And he said that he was frightened at the time, but he said the look on the face of whatever was flying, whatever this thing was, it was just as scared, if not more so than I was. So he's like, whatever I drove up on, it freaked this thing out. Now, he talks about getting up there closer and closer and how he hit his accelerator and all this stuff. And he talks about, you know, the inside of the car becoming dark and he hears all that and hears all the scratches. And he talks about, of course, back home, you know, and he said, man, I was so scared that I wouldn't go out. This is what he told him. I wouldn't go out at night for several days after this whole thing happened. So they ask him, you know, he's like, you know, he wished that he had had somebody with him in the car. So the next morning, like he said, you know, he goes back. He doesn't find anything. He looks into it. Nothing. The whole deal. Now, he told this Everett fella, he said, you know, looking back on this, because I feel like I did something wrong. And Everett's like, what are you talking about? He says, well, I feel like I probably should have stopped and got out and tried to say, you know, is there something I can help you with? Be friendly. That's what he feels like. He's feeling this guilt. Like, maybe I should be friendly. He goes, I wish I could meet up with them again.
Yeah.
So.
Like, sorry, dude. I just freaked out.
I just panicked, man. Yeah. I didn't know what to do. And he goes back in. He tells the whole thing, you know, that he's like, hey, look, I know people are going to be skeptical after hearing what happened to me. And he goes, I completely understand it. He's like, I understand it sounding crazy. And he goes, but like, and he told Everett the same thing. I'll be happy to take a lie detector test to prove my point. But Everett's like, man, this guy, everybody that he's spoken to about Bossack was like, this dude is a stand-up guy. Like, why would he make this whole thing up? So we go into that, and I get to this one thing I'm going to wrap this up with for y'all to listen to. Now, several years ago, there was a fellow named James C. Wyatt, and he lived in Memphis, Tennessee, and he released a copy of his grandfather's journal, which contains some very startling entries into this thing, and I'm going to read these to you. Now, if you take it all literally, the way this whole thing is, it almost ties Bigfoot and UFOs together, and it almost like that for quite some time. But this is what was released. The journal was dated 1888, and James Wyatt's grandfather had recorded some stuff that had happened along the Humboldt County line in Big Woods Country, is what he called it, up there in California, right?
Mm-hmm.
His father and several cowhands had wintered with a local tribe there after delivering some cattle to the fort further north. Now, Grandfather Wyatt was very fluent with many tribal languages and proficient in sign language. So, you know, he was always working with these local tribes and was even involved in a lot of their activities. So the journal goes on to state that one day he came upon a man from the tribe carrying a large platter of raw meat. And at first, the man seemed afraid to answer Wyatt's questions concerning this errand that he was on, but he finally, you know, said, okay, and he allowed Grandpa Wyatt, the old cattleman, to follow him. He said, well, come on. So they go up, and there's a shallow cave and a cliff face. And he says that in this, there's a beast that lives with a shiny black hair that's long, and it covers its entire body. The native Indian fellow there tells him, he goes, except for its palms and an area around its eyes. Now, he says that this man-like creature did not seem wild or vicious. It sat cross-legged, like the natives do, and would eat like the wolves do on this raw meat. So it's sitting there. When they get to this cave, this native fella brings this big platter of raw meat. Now, Grandpa Wyatt goes on to say the creature was built like a big, well-developed man, except for its lack of neck and its long body hair. Now the creature's head seemed to rest directly on its shoulders. Now Wyatt visited the man beast cave, or the man beast in the cave, he says, more than a dozen times. And after much questioning and receiving 2 pounds of tobacco, a compass, and an axe, one of the men from the tribe took Wyatt to a high pinnacle of rock one clear night to tell him of the creature's origin. The natives called him Crazy Bear. That's what they called him. Said he had been brought to the big woods from the stars. Says a small moon had flown down like a swooping eagle and had landed on a plateau a few miles away from the tribe's encampment. The beast in the cave and two other crazy bears had been flung out of the moon before the craft had once again soared off to the stars. The man told Wyatt that the other crazy bears had been left in the vicinity over the years, and Wyatt's guide and several of his fellow villagers had occasionally seen the men who put the crazy bears off the small moon. They did, says, not look like the giant hairy ones, but appeared to be more like men such as themselves. The men from the small moon had much shorter hair than the tribe's people, though they wore shiny clothing. They always waved to the Indians in a friendly manner before they closed the door in their small moon and flew back to the stars. The crazy bears had been led to the village by the Indians, and at no time had the hairy giants offered any resistance to their benefactors. Says the Indians believed that the crazy bears from the stars had been sent to bring them powerful medicine, and they would not permit the creatures to stray away, lest they would be captured by rival tribes. He goes on to talk about how they, you know, there's been a lot of speculation about this. Could these have been, you know, like what you and I have just been talking about? Could these have been something that, are these the aliens themselves, or Mr. Wyatt, who actually let this, you know, his grandfather's journal, he would even go on, and he's been actually quoted speculating that who is to say that the crazy bears weren't exiled to our planet for some crime or other infraction of laws on another planet or dimension. Right. So he says, on the other hand, is it not inconceivable that the hairy ones are the food animals of some distant world that have been planted here on Earth to produce herds, just as the old shipmasters used to place pigs and goats on islands to multiply and flourish for food of later voyages. Says they have not proliferated in great numbers, maybe due to their inability to provide for themselves, especially if they've been kept as produce animals for generations. It goes on to say, or perhaps the climate, the atmosphere, or the food available to them is against their best survival purposes. So what do you think about that? That's it. That's the whole thing is look, like we've discussed with Nick on here before, there's not an overabundant amount of sightings that people have had with Bigfoot and with these aliens. But let's just say this. Maybe it's because everybody that sees Bigfoot is their way. You know, there's thousands of reasons that you haven't seen Bigfoot and the aliens together, like them being thrown out. Right. It is wild that there is a journal from 1888 that's what the natives in the area of California are telling. The tribes are telling them that these hairy crazy bear were thrown out of the moon, and the moon, it's a spacecraft. If you look at the literal translation, if you take exactly what they're saying that a spacecraft landed and basically released Bigfoot.
Yeah.
That's what it's saying. So is it inconceivable, like this fellow puts out, what if there are whatever planet they're on or whatever dimension they're on? Maybe Bigfoot is a criminal, but I've even thought about it and took it this far. The worst thing that you can ever have taken from you, at least the way it affects your family, was dementia. Right. When you see a loved one suffer from dementia, it is the worst of the worst.
Alzheimer's and things like that. Yeah.
Well, what would be the, not full blown, not like Doc, you forget, but what would be the worst thing would happen to you is if they took you away. It's almost like I think of District 9. You seen that?
That's a great movie.
He loses his humanity, and he loses his ability to communicate with his family, yet he lingers out there.
Yeah.
What if that was your punishment? What if they took you, they stripped away your humanity, they changed your look, and you can never communicate with your family again, but they drop you off on this planet to where you can't fit in?
Right, yeah.
You can't fit in. That's it. That's your punishment. you have to live off the way you can live. We're going to make it to where your body will be able to eat. You won't freeze to death, all this stuff. You may live hundreds of years longer than normal, but that's your punishment. Your punishment is you will never be able to go back to the advanced civilization that you came from. You will never be recognizable by any of your family, and you will never be able to communicate with
them.
But in your mind, you still remember everything.
That is a wild theory.
Right? But what if that's what they're doing here?
It may be.
Yeah. It's insane.
That is
it's crazy insane. Stories, man, yeah, and I love it.
I love those kind of stories. Well, if you have any ideas or thoughts of your own on the subject matter, don't forget you can email the show at expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. Also, if you'd like to share some stories, you can send them to the same place, or you can call us at 817-945-3828. Before we get out of here, let's thank our sponsor, ZipRecruiter. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes and in all industries, Cam, to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. Right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. But you got to go to ZipRecruiter.com/expanded. That's ZipRecruiter.com/expanded. Also, don't forget, if you want to help out the show, you can write us a review on iTunes. I believe Cam is going to be doing some shout-outs soon. We've done it before.
Yeah.
And it's been so long since we've done it that we don't remember where we left off.
Oh, yeah, there's
so
no hope
I'm
for
sure,
me.
So I'm sure we probably are going to accidentally skip a lot of people, and we apologize for that. But we're just going to pick a random spot and start shouting out people that have written us reviews. And if we missed you, then I guess the only way to get back in rotation is to write us another review.
Right, yeah.
But we're sitting at like 729 right now, and we'd really like to get to 1,000 in the year 2018. So if you want to write us a review, that would be awesome. Cam, do you have any shout-outs prepared?
I've got
today?
Some going here. Bobzil Aliens 125.
Thank you.
Please Go Away. Deanne, or I guess it's supposed to be Dean. Dean in St. Paul. I Hate Nicknames. Big Boy 6247. Harley at Travel Oddities. Saber 5150. Nikki Wonkenstein. Shadow Fox. And Monkey Man Junk Metal Dude.
Wow, that is a mouthful.
Yes, so thank and Celtic Rider.
Right on.
So thank y'all so much. Like I said, look, I'm starting at the start of 2017, and I'm going to bring it up. If I have missed you, I am truly sorry. And write another one. Get back in the rotation. Right? Write another one. You can write more than one. Bring it on.
Yeah, we'd appreciate it. Don't forget, if you like Expanded Perspectives, but you want more, we offer an additional show every week called Expanded Perspectives Elite. And that's easy to sign up for. You just have to go to the website, expandedperspectives.com. Click on the Elite tab. Signing up is easy. It's about $5 a month, and you'll get an additional show every week, as well as access to the entire back catalog. It's an incredible deal for only $5. And your monthly contribution helps out the show tremendously. We use that money to buy books, periodicals, equipment, just whatever, just to keep the show going. It helps us out. Camera equipment. I know Cam's got his eyes on some new GoPros.
Woo, woo, what, what?
Even though we have the Hero 4s. It seems like the Hero 4s were brand new just the other day, and they're already out on Hero 6.
Yeah.
I know that you've been looking to upgrade some more cameras because you wanted to do some filming.
Well, I'm fixed to start launching more stuff on YouTube.
Yeah,
and then, like we said, I'm putting more stuff on that YouTube, and then we're going to start another. That was the whole idea, and that's the thing, is we're going to start another YouTube channel of all of the crazy stuff that me and Kyle go and do. All that, we may have interviews on there, we may have our adventures on there, anything outdoorsy. That way the basic channel has all the stories and all the shows on it, and then the other one has all the other stuff. That way you don't clutter them all up. We can keep them separate. Yeah. And do the whole thing that way, so you can subscribe to them. So it'll be coming out yet, but I don't know what we're going to name it. We've been kicking around all kinds of names and all that, so we have no idea how that's going to work out. But it's going to be launched, I would say, probably within the next couple weeks. I'm going to launch. I may even launch it this week.
Yeah, let's put it out there. If anybody has any name suggestions for the possible new channel on YouTube, go ahead and email that suggestion to expandedperspectives@yahoo.com.
Yeah, email us, put it on Facebook. You can message us with it on Facebook. However you want to get in touch with us. Send us some messages on it. We'll take a look. We'll try to find a good name.
Right. I've got some recent news about my youngest son, Luke. Over the weekend, I introduced him to Jason and the Argonauts.
How much does he love it?
He loves it. He loves Talos. He loves the Hydra. He likes where they take the
teeth.
Have you
showed him the old school Clash of the Titans, too?
Well, I'm getting to it. Okay, so he enjoyed Jason and the Argonauts. So I'm like, well, I know what I'm going to buy next on iTunes. I'm going to buy Clash of the Titans. Won't have it.
Is he not digging the Kraken or Medusa?
He saw the trailer with Medusa. And he won't come in the room. I'm like, but you like Jason the Argonauts. You'll love Clash of the Titans. Now, I've seen both versions. The newer version's not terrible. I still prefer the original 1981 version. But yeah, no, he will not entertain Clash of the Titans at all.
You may have to show him like the new one.
So it's really hard to, I don't understand. Like I said, he'll watch America, Rolf, and London. Doesn't bother him. But then you watch Medusa, but the lousy graphics of 1981, can't handle it. I don't know if he's got a fear of snakes. I don't know, but it's just wild where he's really into some things and other things that you would think, well, that's not going to scare him. Totally freaks him out. Like, he didn't even like Bilbo, the robotic owl he saw.
He didn't, wasn't even digging
no,
that.
No, he won't even come in the room.
But yet, wow. Well, when my daughter was little, she loved Gollum from Lord of the Rings. She loved it. She hated Bruce from Finding Nemo.
Yeah, see?
It doesn't. Yeah, I don't know.
It's a child's mind. Yeah. Speaking of people with a child's mind, what do you got planned for your week?
Oh, I see how you're going to do all that. That's fine. I'm fixing to be a single father for quite some time. My wife is going on a vacation with her cousins.
All right, that's the cruise, right?
They're going on that cruise. Before. So, yeah, they'll be gone. She'll be gone for like 9 days. So, yeah, it'll be real party central in my house. I won't have much to do. I'll be chilling. That'll be nice. I don't know. It depends on how this weather goes. Because the weather gets sketchy, they won't even send me to work. Like, they put me on hold and just be like, you're not coming
yeah.
in.
Right.
So I have to try to get all that stuff done because I got a bunch of stuff. I don't know, man. This whole week with this weather, everything's going to be a little crazy.
I'm just trying to grind it out because in about 4 weeks, actually 4 weeks today, we're going to be heading out to Colorado. We're going to be snow skiing and snowboarding, and I know you're going as well.
So whoop,
whoop. We'll do some filming up there in the mountains.
We will for sure do some filming.
Well, I can't wait. Well, that's about all the time we have for this episode of Expanded Perspectives. For Pretty Lights, Inner Tradition Books, New Page Books, Llewellyn Books, Anomalous Books, and Ancient American Magazine. We'll be speaking to you elite members later this week. For everyone else, till next time, I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hale.
Peace, y'all. Wow.